श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री देवजी गोपाल की जय, श्री गौराधा माधव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, श्री द्वादशी की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि ओम। तो गुड मॉर्निंग, वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू एज वेल एज एवरीवन्स जॉइनिंग ऑनलाइन। वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग टुडे विद आवर सीरीज ऑफ लेक्चर्स अबाउट श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति, द प्रेयर्स ऑफ ब्रह्मा। वी आर रीचिंग आवर बेसिकली लास्ट सेक्शन ऑफ द होल स्टडी, finishing it between this next week, I think. Today we are now lecture 39. I think has been my longest series in my whole life of lectures, I don't know, probably. So today we'll be studying verse 37, reaching the year and the 40th verse, the last one. Yesterday we did a brief recap of the whole Brahma Stuti, and so I won't repeat that again. But yes, we will do some brief recap of yesterday's verse, 36, when we basically explained how nothing is a shackle if connected with Krishna's service. Everything has the potential to not be a shackle, if you will. Everything, in other words, has the potential, in more positive terms, to be a facilitator, a portal, a door to serve in the direction of Krishna, because as we always say, whatever exists is a Shakti of Bhagavan. Well, there's nothing outside of that scope. So, and every Shakti of Bhagavan is intrinsically, conceived, ideally existing for being connected with its source. So Bhagavan is the source, Shaktiman is the energetic source of all Shakti, we included, being one of them. So everything, that's the passion of the obsession of the sincere sadhaka, if you will, know how to link every single aspect of reality with its center. Because there is a center, there is a source, and everything else has the potential to be connected with that. Of course, as we spoke yesterday, we will be able to do so with everything and everyone as much as long as we are doing that with ourselves first. Because if we are not doing our homework, just we will be paying lip service to this idea of engaging everything in Krishna's service, except for us. So it all begins at home. So I'll read the verse briefly. Brahma said yesterday, 5,000 years ago, but yesterday for us, O Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feeling for the family members remain foot shackles. This was the point. The problem is not with attachment, with home, with family members. The problem is with proper reading of all those things. Proper reading of ourselves in relation to those things. So, without seeing the center and actually trying ourselves to enter into that role of being the center that only corresponds to Krishna. So when Krishna is not in the center and you think you are the center, because you cannot be the center. We won't say when you are the center, because that doesn't happen. As hard as you try, it won't happen, just in case. So in that case, everything becomes, everything that can be a portal and a facilitator becomes shackle, ball and chain, prison, house, thief, all these like negative connotations which have only to do with our own approach to reality. And of course, Brahma said this verse in the context of, remember, he was praising the Brajavasis and the unique love and how they relate to Krishna as one of them in seemingly ordinary terms. So he's trying to clarify further here. Although they are offering their houses, families, cows, everything, themselves, hearts, minds, bodies to you, they are totally detached. They have house, they have family members, they have all the things mentioned in this verse negatively. But the verse, of course, is saying, until people become your devotees, this is negative. But when they become your devotees, this takes another form altogether. So what to speak of the highest devotees? How family members, house, and attachments will play out when you are the highest devotee. Interesting. So Brahma is seeing that now. He's in Vrindavan. So he's trying to further clarify this aprakrit situation of the Vrajavasis, this transcendental situation, although it seems ordinary to the untrained eye, with proper training, gyan chakshus, by training your vision through shastra, and eventually you obtain prem chakshus, the eye of love, you can fully see who Vrajavasis actually are, what real love, how ultimate love expresses itself in transcendence, in relation to God. That's an important question. Okay, what's love? And what's the highest love? How that plays out in relation to the perfect object of love, God? What's that corresponding form of God in relation to the highest form of love? What's a particular stage in which that interaction will take place? Every person can ask those questions. You don't need to be a Gaudiya Vaishnava, no? But in order to reply to that question, you may need to get closer to a Gaudiya Vaishnava, because you will see, okay, this is the fullest implications of love, God, loving God, how, where. Brahma is seeing that here. No? So again, here, remember, it's not easy to, and we will continue seeing that today, it's not easy to understand the highest love, because it's the highest thing. And even God, in relation to the highest love, God is not easy to understand to begin with, from scratch. A very generic idea of God is what? So what to speak of God in his most exposed moment to the highest love? No? That will require some particular angle of vision. Because as we say, we are so much accustomed on the other side, on the other extreme, to wander in the realm of karma, with everything is seen with us in the false center, exploiting everything. On top of that, some people may become, like some commentators say here, sannyasi, gyanis, renouncers, and detached from everything, nothing belongs to me. The karmi will think everything belongs to me. The gyani will say nothing belongs to me. A devotee will say everything belongs to Krishna. But the Vrajavasi will say Krishna belongs to us. So this is another, one more step further into this type of conception. And they conceive Krishna as theirs in mamata, in divine possessiveness, and they engage everything in through that particular lens of Krishna's our friend, our beloved, our little child, our something, my. So they have an I based on that sense of my, a sense of my in connection to Krishna. So they have a whole identity constituted of possessiveness. Raga atmika means that. Raga atmika means their whole atma, whole being is made of rag. Rag means passionate love, possessiveness. You know? Possessiveness, passionate. That's their whole being constituted of. So, and this also, of course, sheds light, the part of shedding light on the situation, position of the Vrajavasis, and how user-friendly bhakti can be even for us, where we are, how we can engage everything in the service of Krishna. Again, we are not Vrajavasis, and we can just imitate, but they are showing us this is possible. Of course, they are showing us that from perfection, and we kind of just imitate perfection, but we at least receive some hope that's possible and some guidelines how to address that in our particular stance and how to gradually. All the things that today I conceive as an obstacle, how I can recalibrate my approach to them so they are no longer an obstacle. The environment is friendly. There are no enemies outside. There are no obstacles. All the things are in our own conception of reality. Srila Siddha Maharaj will say, oh, it's not like you're... All your problems arise due to a lack of conception. That's a very interesting sutra. All your your perceived problems just come because of a lack of conception. You are misreading reality. So whatever is an obstacle can become a facilitator if engaged in seva. So that's Brahma here is not only shedding light on the Vrajavasis situation, but glorifying the nature of bhakti in general, above other processes which require that you go to the cave and you accept sannyas and you leave everything or whatever. But again, we are not to underestimate this high ideal and think, oh, I can just then have my house, my family members, but I'm a devotee. Yeah, but what does it mean I'm a devotee? You can also be, again, abusing this high ideals and ending up being a grihamedi or an attached person at home in the name of I'm a devotee. But I'm a devotee, so you cannot tell me anything because I'm a devotee. You can be grihamedi or you can be a sannyasi medi. You also, no? You can be, I mean, it's not that because you are not a grihasta and you are a renunciant, you cannot fall into complacency or attachments. I mean, the foot shackles will take another form, basically. The ball and chain will come in saffron color, if you will. But you can end up being as equal or more conditioned by abusing this type of noble ideals given by the Vrajavasis example. So Krishna, as one of the commentators said yesterday, the ultimate basis for all raga, for all attachment. Raga can repose eternally, perfectly in him only. That he's a perfect object of attachment. You want to be attached? No problem, we say. There's no problem with attachment. Srila Prabhupada will say Krishna consciousness is not the science of detachment, it's the science of attachment. But it's a science. So it's not just like, let's get attached. It's a science. You have to know how to do it. It's a procedure, step by step, how to transfer all the attachment tendency that I'm investing in the wrong direction to the perfect object of attachment, Krishna. So all these tendencies, kama, krodha, lobha, as we spoke yesterday, can be dovetailed and engaged in seva. You don't need to destroy anything, basically, but re-express everything to the perfect object of all tendencies. Now, that can be one name for Krishna. The perfect object of every tendency. Whatever tendency you have, just try to relink that in the context of anukul seva, favorable service to Krishna. Again, it's not just pressing a button and it's there. We need to be trained, educated, transformed, redeemed, converted. And there's a whole process, sadhana, for that. But it's possible. Just to know it's possible, it's like, wow. So today, in today's verse, Brahma will conclude this specific section of prayers inside the bigger section of prayers. Remember, there are subsections. So this section is mostly a praise of the Vrajavasis, as we have seen yesterday and in the previous verses. And today will be verse 37, which will be the last prayer in glorification of the Vrajavasis. And then Brahma will reach his concluding remarks, like wrapping up his whole presentation. So how will Brahma today glorify the last verse of glorification of the Vrajavasis? He will do by stating how the love of the Vrajavasis that he described in the previous verse and the glory of it, how such love is so glorious that it makes Bhagavan come to earth on a regular basis, if you will, and behave like a human. Not only come to earth as God, but come to earth as one of them. To one of the Vrajavasis over and over again, and not only be with them in transcendence, but also come here with them to taste this particular flavor of interaction with them on earth. As our Gurus likes to say, when a film is done on location, it has a particular flavor to it. So this will be, we recently did some brief study in our Janmastami Harikatha on some verses of the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 4, where Krishna explained why he came to earth, like about the principle of avatar and parampara, and he came for secondary purposes, primary purposes. Remember? So somehow we will see this today in an upgraded version. Today's verse will be an upgraded version of those Gita verses. Almost every verse of the Bhagavad Gita you can find their upgraded version in the Srimad Bhagavatam here and there. So not only Krishna is coming again, because Krishna in the Gita say, I come to earth, paritranaya sadhunam, to protect my sadhus, to relate to them. But he's coming again, as behaving as in a human-like terms, for their sake. So Brahma will make this point in today's verse. So the point is, not only the Vrajavasis seem to be apparently materially attached people, although they are not, but Krishna seems to adopt that same mood as well. That seems he's doing that. He is a Vrajavasi and showing that to the whole world, coming to the world and shouting the four directions. I am a Vrajavasi. What do you say about God? I am a Vrajavasi. So Brahma will conclude his inner explosion of appreciation for the Vrajavasi in this section of the prayers with this verse 37. So let's go to it. I'll recite it first in Sanskrit once, then we can recite it all together. And then we'll go to the translation. So this verse is also in Anushtup Chanda, the same meter as yesterday's verse. Very typical one. It says like this. Prapancham nisprapanchopi bidambayasi bhutale prapanna janatananda sandoham pratitum prabhu. Prapancham nisprapanchopi bidambayasi bhutale prapanna janatananda sandoham pratitum prabhu. Okay, so translation says like this. Brahma is addressing Krishna as Prabhu, Master. So, O Master, in order to expand the totality of bliss of your surrendered devotees, you imitate the ways of people on earth, although you have nothing to do with material existence. That's today's verse. And this is the conclusion again to Brahma's praise of the Vrajavasis. Again, he is not saying here Vrajavasis, but if you pay attention to the context in which this verse is coming, and the commentators will make it that further clear, it's like a way of concluding, okay, you come here, I mean, your whole Shristi, I mean, for you to come here on earth, there has to be a planet earth. For there to be a planet earth, there has to be a whole creation lila, Shristi lila. But all that is for the purpose of you coming here and giving pleasure to your Vrajavasis in a particular way on earth. That's the main reason for this whole multi-cosmic creation. Although we may want it to have another purpose, more connected with whatever, us in the center or whatever, but it's mostly justifying the most intimate loving interaction of Bhagavan and his devotees. So this is a point that Brahma is making in this verse. You have nothing to do with material existence. You're never entering direct contact with Maya Shakti. Now, Maya Shakti, material energy, is one of your Shaktis, but this Shastra describes you just activate her by a silent glance from the distance. Like implying you don't have like close interaction. You never get as close to that because you are too close to your Swarup Shakti and fully enveloped by the influence of that internal energy of yours taking the form of your devotees and becoming you, the all-attracted one. So although you don't have anything to do with this world, you come here. And the purpose is, again, expand the totality of bliss, not just some bliss, but the totality of bliss of your surrendered devotees, and you imitate the ways of earth, of people on earth, of which, of course, that means Naralila, and Naralila corresponds with Vrajavasis, those devotees. But Krishna has many devotees, but for reciprocating or expanding the bliss of his Vrajavasis, he has to be a Vrajavasi. There's no way. There's no other way around, basically. So that's the idea of today's verse, and we'll try to unpack. First, let's go to the word by word. I'll recite each word, and you can repeat after me, please, both in Sanskrit as well as in English. Prapancham, the material world. Nisprapanchaha, completely transcendental to material existence. Which of course refers to Krishna being completely transcendental. Api, although. Vidambayasi, you imitate. Bhutale, on the surface of the earth. Prapanna, who are surrendered. Janata, of people. Ananda sandoham, the multitude of bliss. Pratitum, in order to spread. Prabhu, O Master. Basically, that's the implications of this verse. So let's start with our Bhaktivedanta Pavanubhata, our Guru Maharaj's commentary. to this verse that will be coming in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandal, and then we'll continue with the other more ancient commentators. So this is a long one, an interesting one. So he will begin the argument by presenting the Bhava Nubhata commentary by presenting a possible argument to the points that have been established recently. To the argument which it follows a little bit what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will make. Because what Guru Maharaj is writing here is, of course, part of his own insight, but as well like a summary of what the main commentators are saying, put in other words and with certain dynamic, and adding his own insight to that. So the possible argument to begin with here is, but how can God be someone's son and intimate friend, acting just like people of the world, whose identities as friends and sons are an illusion? So that can be an argument. But God is having friends in this world, but in this world we see that friendship and so on is not the ultimate reality, and God is the ultimate reality. Are not Krishna's appearance as a son and friend also some kind of illusion, rather than eternal roles he plays in a drama, entrance into which is the highest goal of life? That's a possible argument. No, it's not all this Braja Lila, earthly Lila. He's behaving like a human person. It's just like an illusion. It's not the actual, the ultimate reality. This is not a good argument, Guru Maharaj says. And it has already been answered when Brahma explained that Krishna's friendship with Sridham and the multitude of Braja Sakas, or friends in Vrindavan, is eternal. He refers back here to the Ahobhagyan verse, which includes the word Mitram Sanatanam. Mitram means friendship, and Sanatanam means eternal. So he's their eternal friend, which means this is not a temporary experience, illusory or whatever. So Brahma already established that. Nonetheless, this argument surfaces again in Brahma's heads. Not only Brahma's head, but he has four. So somehow he had already solved that, but somehow it comes again. Admittedly, it is hard to wrap up one head around it. To speak, if you have poor. So the point with this is, oh, Brahma already answered that, but it comes again, like implying this is not so easy to understand. Even if you think you already hear the explanation and know how to reply to that, you understood that, probably it may surface again, because, again, there's lots of many layers of complexity to integrate to reach that level of naivete, second naivete. So don't be so sure that you already understood it. You already got Krishna Lila. If you think like that, you may be the next one in a Vimohan Lila to see how much you got it. Brahma answers his own mental query by stating that when appearing in this world, so he has the doubt and he replies it himself in this verse. By stating that when appearing in this world, Krishna increases the bliss of his devotees. That is, he brings about the end of their material life by becoming their friend, son, and so on. His friendship ends illusion, and thus it cannot be an illusion itself. That was the main argument. Maybe that relationships are illusion. So no, those relationships are the end of all illusion. So how they can be illusion? His relationships with his devotees in Braj mimic material relationships even as they transcend them. So they seem to be something, but they are totally beyond that. Krishna is really the son of Yashoda and really the source of everything. Madhurya and Aishwarya, everything really at the same time. And he showed both of these truths to her. Remember, Brahma referred to this previously in his prayers when he opened his mouth and Yashoda wanted to see if Krishna ate dirt. And she saw dirt, a lot, earth, planets and planets of it. So Aishwarya was there, but still Madhurya was there because Krishna was still there, not expanding, just like standing there, localized. I didn't do anything. They are lying. My friends are plotting against me. They are jealous of me, always defeating them in wrestling. So the concept was Madhurya, but in the concept, that's such an Aishwarya king. So he's really the son of Yashoda, but he's also really the source of everything. Or, last paragraph, it should be understood that the intimacy of Krishna's relationship with his friends is itself the fullest expression of his majesty, his godhood. This is a point that Guru Maharaj likes to make a lot. This Madhurya is the highest Aishwarya. And he quotes something that Baladev Vidyabhushan will comment to this verse. Baladev Vidyabhushan comments that the Brajavasis have an imprint on the back of their heads that says Aishwarya, but they do not see it. Like Aishwarya is in the backdrop of the whole Brajalila's idea. Should one ask further how they could not see it? Well, at least they cannot see it in themselves, because they're with a mirror, but that will be appear backwards, but in others' necks. So should one ask further how they could not see it? Well, being lowly cowherds, perhaps even if they could see it, they could not read it. Divine ignorance is truly bliss. Guru Maharaj ki jai. So that's how he concludes. Ignorance is bliss, a famous saying. But we apply here divine. Jang sunya bhakti, brain dead bhakti. Probably in the Braj they don't even know how to read. So that's why they cannot see Aishwarya there. And there's one footnote that he also adds at the very end of this Bhavanuvad. So I'll share the footnote as well, because there are some interesting points. He says, the idea that Krishna exhibits greater Aishwarya in Braj, this point, is also explained by Rupa Goswami citing the Brahmanda Purana in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, 1529. The verse says, O Krishna, the demons that were difficult to kill with your chakra in Dwarka, in your Dwarka form, were easily killed by you during your childhood pastimes. O Krishna, if you moved your eyebrow while playing with your friends in Braj, Brahma, Rudra, and others situated in the sky tremble with fear. Well, looks like showing you are playing with your friend, but there's so much Aishwarya there. In Dwarka, you have to invoke chakra and do all the things, but in Braj, you kill them just like they're playing. How much power is there? That's the point. Although overtly it doesn't play out itself as Aishwaryik, but it is. And Guru Maharaj concludes the footnote saying, and of course, Brahma himself has just witnessed the height of majesty. Now remember, some minutes ago he saw unlimited Narayans coming from each one of these expansions of Krishna, showing Krishna is the source of Narayan, Narayan is a limb of Krishna, of God. What's going on? In the height of majesty. However, the idea is that the sweetness of Krishna's Braja Lila itself is the be-all and end-all of majesty. The majesty of Madhurya itself. Well, Madhurya in this case referring to the intimacy of the love of Braj. So that's the highest majesty. That's the highest opulence, if you will. So that's the end of our Guru Maharaj's Bhavanubad, including the footnote. So this, again, very interesting. It's always very important that we, even as Gaudiyas, we always remain in this constant, like, comparative study. Not to say we have the highest thing, but just to not take for granted the depth of our ideal, because it's so high, but you get accustomed to that, and it's like, yeah, Krishna and the Guru. But if you put that in contrast and compare with other things, you really realize, oh, this is very extraordinary. So, for example, to the Bhagavad Gita, to the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, something in connection to what we say in yesterday's verse. On Arjuna, the beginning of the Gita is Arjuna has to slay his false sense of relationships. He has to slay his ego in the form of the ones on the other side of the army, if you will. And as we say yesterday, our material identity is defined by our material present attachments. No, I'm attached to someone, and that attachment defines who I am. So I need the object of that attachment to confirm who I am, who I think I am. So Krishna says in the Gita in the beginning, came over to that, no? Slay that, kill that. But the Bhagavatam, again, is taking us a little bit one step further, or maybe a few more, by showing us which is the ultimate intention of the Bhagavad Gita, which is not merely slay your false ego, but Srila Sivaramaraja will quote Hegel, die to live. So what means to live? No? There has to be a he will say also, like, positive and progressive immortality. It's not just stop dying, immortality, but there's something going on there, something positive, dynamic. So you have to have an identity there, a seva abhimam, which means to consider yourself in terms of service, with Krishna in the center, of course. And again, this shows up here in the Bhagavatam, Mitram Sanatanam. Krishna can be your eternal friend. That's way beyond this idea of slay your false ego. No? Of course, that part has its place, but there's eternal friendship, or there's eternal parenthood, and whatever. So, if that friendship is eternal, we made that point when we studied the whole Bhagavad verse, if the friendship is eternal, Krishna has to be the eternal friend of some devotees who have to be his eternal friends. So everything has to be eternal. Mm-hmm. If there's Mitram Sanatanam, eternal friendship means Krishna is eternally the friend of someone, but there has to be a someone mm-hmm. who has to be the eternal friend of Krishna. So those Sridham, Sudham, Subal, and so on, they are eternal friends. So that friendship is eternal, that's the idea. This is not an illusory, Naimitika, occasional lila that Krishna shows on earth, but actually it's not happening over there in Golok or something. But again, and Brahma already explained that. So the fact that he already explained that to himself, because he's making sense through these prayers of what he himself is realizing, but the fact that he again presents this point, as we mentioned, shows how difficult it is to grasp the ultimacy, or to understand the ultimacy of the Aprakat lila. Lila Raj, which seems ordinary but is transcendent, super transcendental. So as we mentioned before, don't think you have understood that completely. Never just reach that point of I got it, certainty, the opposite of faith. Remember we spoke about that last week? That goes against your shraddha. Never assert yourself in that way. No? It's not so easy to reach that second naivety. First, some things need to be in place, properly integrated. There has to be a proper Aishwaric backdrop with proper sambandha, how Krishna is God actually first, so someday we can forget that, but that someday may not come as quick as we may like. First, you have to have in place so many things. And of course, important point that our Gumaraj remarked here is that Krishna in Braj, which is for us the original form of Godhead, when the Bhagavatam is saying Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam, we will add to that Braja Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. Because you have Mathura Krishna stu, no, Madhwarka Krishna stu, no, Braja Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam, yeah. Aradyo Bhagavan Braja Satanayasta Dhamma Vrindavanam. That's our worshipable object. So, this Braja Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam, which is Brahma is having the darshan of here, he's performing his avatar lila, or his descent on earth, first and foremost, or we could say even exclusively, for the sake of his devotees, to expand multitude of bliss, as this verse is saying, for them. Jiva Goswami elaborates this verse in a very detailed way. We don't have time here to go through that. But in his Krishna Sandarbha, he elaborates very much in detail how the whole purpose for Krishna coming on earth is to increase the pleasure of his devotees and Brajavasis in particular. All the other universal cosmic functions and performed by other, like a byproduct of that, by other related expansions and forms of him. Like, but he, in his original identity, he's too concerned with playing with the Vrajavasis, basically. All the other functions performed by Vishnu and all these corollary expansions of him. So therefore, I mean, all this to make a point, this intimate interaction he's having with the Vrajavasis is not a show, no. It's not a false thing, a temporary, illusory thing. It's so real that everything else, including this creation, is for the sake of facilitating that thing. Because again, that's Krishna's real identity, ultimate identity as a Vrajavasi, only reciprocated when the love of his devotees. That's himself at its best, if you will. No? That's his most real, the most real side of himself. And as we say these days, since the devotee have this unique fervent desire, like it just showed that I want to love him like a child, he has to be her child. He must, not at one point in time, eternally, but he has to exist in correspondence with that desire. In that sense, as we spoke before, we are tatastha, and Krishna is tatastha in one sense, in the sense that he's a product of the environment. A particular type of bhakti makes him adopt a particular form. You change the bhakti, he changes his form. You put Hanuman, he becomes Ramachandra. You bring Radha, he becomes Tribhanga Lalita. You took all devotees away, he appears as Brahman. It's the same absolute, but in different settings, if you will. So in that sense, he's also carved by the influence of the environment. Of course, in this case, the environment is only in terms of Swarup Shakti. In our case, we are tatastha means you can be on that side or on this side. So in that sense, of course, Krishna is not tatastha. It cannot be on the two sides. Or he will be in one side, Swarup Shakti, but when he comes on this side, as avatar, he only comes for the sake of the other side. He's bringing the other side into this side. So he never comes into this side, Maya Shakti, horizon, if you will, but just avatar, descend without being touched by Maya. So Krishna is just, the point is, Krishna is just existing for the sake of reciprocating with his devotees. As we say the other day, he has no business other than satisfying their wishes. So he's forced, happily forced, if you will, to appear in whatever form every devotee wishes passionately to love him. And he exists in that form eternally to reciprocate accordingly. So again, this is a very unique theological notion. And on top of that, again, as my Guru Maharaj mentioned before going to Sridhar Swami's commentary, although everything seems so naive, so simple, so everything, all the possible Aishwarya you can conceive and more is there in the background, buried under layers and layers of affection, of intimacy. That's the only cemetery of Braj, if you see. There's always there's everywhere there's cemetery in Braj. You never say cemetery, but it's Aishwarya is in the underlying underground of everything. That's the underground reality, if you will. No, Aishwarya, that's Braj's cemetery, if you will, buried under layers and layers of affection. And that's what allows Madhurya to happen. That's the main point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes over and over again in his Raghavarma Chandrika. You can't have intimacy with God and call that Madhurya if there is no Aishwarya in the background. Because if you take the Aishwarya out and there's only intimacy, that's ordinary thing. That's the same intimacy you can have here with anyone. So what makes the difference between the charm of Krishna being the son of Yashoda and any other baby and their parents in this world? The difference is that he's God. Aishwarya. And despite that, he's the son of Yashoda. On top of that. Oh, charming. If you take Aishwarya out, you take Madhurya out. You are cancelling Madhurya. The absence of one is cancelling the presence of the other. So you have to understand how important there is. And that's why Baladevi Devotion gives this interesting comment. They have this label on their necks, but it's behind and nobody knows how to read it. But ignorance is bliss. That popular quote in English, he ultimately applies in Braj. No? In Latin, they have this quote called docta ignorantia, which means like scholarly ignorance or something like that. No, but of course, it's a well-known description that mostly has to do with depict the limitations of human knowledge. No, so when you understand the limitations of your own capacity to know, there you have a very wise ignorance. But here we can take that quote to another level and apply to the Gyan Sunya Bhakti of the Brajavasis. No? Their devotion, devoid of knowledge, even devoid of the knowledge that Krishna is God. Devoid of that Aishwarya. So that's the ultimate docta, ignorantia. They have the real PhD about that. Although they seem to be uncivilized and not even to read one word in the necks of one another. That's the paradoxes of love. The people with the highest knowledge may not know how to read. Of course, when they come in Gaur Lila as Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they really know how to read, how to write, how to But in the context of that, the requirements of the Braja Lila require them to be uncivilized. It's not that they are, but it's that just like it gets in the way of loving dealings. So, that's it. Let's continue with, or let's begin, in one sense, with the most ancient commentaries of the Bhagavatam, starting by Sridhar Swami. So let's begin with him, his Bhavartha Dipika, very venerated commentary that he wrote that Mahaprabhu embraced very dear to his heart. So he says briefly, he is paraphrasing Brahma, like most of the commentators, and he says, here Brahma says, in this verse, you imitate the material world in order to spread the great amount of the different kinds of bliss of those who have taken shelter of you. That's kind of a paraphrasing of the verse. So generally Sridhar Swami and many others say that. No? They first repeat the verse and they will say, okay, the gist of this is the following. So he says the sense of this verse is your reciprocation from the Brajavasis Bhakti is not affected by being a deceptive son, etc. The following. So again, making this point, it's not illusory. The way you are reciprocating with them is not in terms of something that is not real. You are their son. You are their friend. It's not that you play the role of that, you make the show of that, because they want that and you have to reciprocate. Okay, I'm your son. I'm God, but okay, you want that. I make the show. It's not like that. He's really into that role because he is that role. It's not that he enters into. So that's actually who Krishna is, which is, again, this is a very fine theological point. We can hear that hundreds of times for decades and it may not enter our hearts. It may be in our heads and we may quote and reply and repeat, quote, copy and paste, but to really get to that point that Krishna is something else apart from being God and how he feels that himself, he's really, who Krishna really is not so much related with God. God is somewhere else. Is more than that. No? Again, for us it's difficult to think about God. What to speak if someone is more than God? Is God beyond God? That's not an easy topic to swallow. Require lots of tons of grace coming to us to really allow us to enter into these deep mysteries. So that's who Krishna is again. And you reciprocate with them by being who you are. That's the basic idea. No? Or we could even better put that, you, Krishna, reciprocate to the Brajavasis by being all that you can be. Because God is something, but also he can be. He has. Because if you say God, okay, who is God? Who is? I will say Narayan. But what's all that God can be? Krishna. So he plays out his potential and he transcends his godhood. I mean, that remains there somewhere, but he became something more. You follow my point? So you are something, but you can be something more. And you still are the other thing, but you became an upgraded version of yourself. So we could say this the same thing here. God is something, but he can become something else. And that's Krishna. So we have potential, he has potential. All that he can be, all that he is, Vishnu Narayan Vaikuntha, God. He is God. All that God can be, the word God starts to melt and appears Krishna in between those three letters. Because God, as we always say, has more to do with G-O-D. No? Generator, operator, destroyer. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. That's three Murti. Those are other functions, more administrative, managerial dynamics in connection to the world. That's it, the most general idea of God or Paramatma. Mm-hmm. But Krishna, I mean, he has nothing to do with that. Operator. So Bhagavan, again, has his own potential. God has potential. God is who he is, but in potential, in potentialness of all that he can be, become, as Guru Maharaj likes, a further becoming. Krishna has God has a further becoming, further. He can go beyond Godhood. And that happens in connection to the love of his devotees. And of course, if you want to even play that out even more, you have to speak in terms of Gaur-lila, but that's another series altogether. But Krishna is God, all that God can be, but Mahaprabhu is all that Krishna can be. And therefore, all that God can be. And that's why we say Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a way of saying that's all that God can be. Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the Supreme Personality. But Mahaprabhu is Supreme Personality of Krishna. All that Krishna can be is found in Mahaprabhu. So, yeah. Gaudiyas like to make your head spin over and over again. So basically that will be the idea. I mean, Sridhar Swami didn't say all the things like this, but we are trying to to extract some of the implications of that. Okay. Let's continue with Sanatan Goswami's commentary in his Brihad Vaishnava Toshini. Also some brief words. Brahma is saying through him the following. Although you are beyond the material world, you imitate the world by being a son, etc. So in that sense, he's imitating, because the word vidayam basir is like you imitate. But what does it mean, imitate? It doesn't mean you make a show, but you behave in certain relationships that seem to be the ones we see here. This main emotional, around which something revolves. Yeah, emotional pivots or centers, friendship, romantic love, parenthood. So you seem to be imitating the relationships of this world, but actually, of course, we know what you show is the original version, if you will. Whatever else that happens to be is an imitation, if you want to put it in that way. But you are not imitating in the sense, again, that you are making a show. Our acharyas, you can see how much they endeavor to make this point. Krishna is not making a show of being a friend. He's not making a show of being crying in front of Yashoda. I mean, sometimes he makes the show of crying, but that's a part of the lila. But sometimes he's really afraid of things like this. That's he himself in the lila. So our acharyas want to make this point over and over again. He's not making a show. That's himself. That's the one we worship. It's not that we worship God and this is a show version of him in a lila. But this lila is the ultimate reality. And of course, Sanatan Goswami then says, so for what purpose he comes to this world, quote-unquote, imitating the ways of this world? To expand the bliss of your devotees. But interestingly here, Sanatan Goswami will extend the idea not only to the Brajavasis, with whom Krishna will be reciprocated in lila on earth. He will say, you come with the purpose of expanding the bliss of your devotees by hearing about your pastimes connected with Braj. In other words, to expand the bliss of all of you that are hearing about this pastime. So this applies, of course, this also applies, he comes to expand the bliss of his associates in Vrindavan, or those devotees who happen to be in the Boma Lila, having become sadhana siddhas, perfected by practice. But also applies to those like us, who are hearing about that, and by being able to hear about his lilas, we can engage in sadhana on the basis of those narratives, of that shravan, that kirtan. Prima rasani ariyasa korite ashvadan, raga marga bhakti loki korite prachanan. Krishna comes on earth to taste the essence of rasa with his associates, yes, and a byproduct of that interaction that we are describing with the Brajavasis, raga marga bhakti loki korite prachanan. He comes to preach, to establish the raga marga. Of course, he's not that Krishna is actually establishing a sampradaya and speak, but by him engaging in those lilas with the Brajavasis, in that sense, he's established preaching raga marga, because raga marga is based on following the mood of the Brajavasis, but for doing that, you first have to know who are the Brajavasis and which is their mood, and the mood is in connection with Krishna. So by Krishna having those lilas, he's giving us a chance to engage in Shravan, Kirtan, Smaran, Bhagavatam, Katha, and all the things. So in that sense, we could say this verse also is including us, when Brahma is saying, you come on earth to expand the bliss of your devotees. So yes, the ones who are relating to you in lila But the ones who after thousands of years are here in the jungle of Costa Rica, benefiting from those lilas. So we are included in the equation. Very generous. So that's how Sanatan Goswami concludes in this very generous note, including us. So let's continue with Jiva Goswami's commentary. We have him and his and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So bear with me. So Jiva Goswami, in his Lagu Vaishnava Tosani, he again will paraphrase Brahma. Says, Brahma is asking here, what is the purpose of your pastimes? So he will create some conversation between Krishna and Brahma in between these lines of this verse. So Brahma may ask, what is the purpose of your pastime? Krishna replies, to spread intense bliss to the people of Braj and to myself by sweet pastimes rather than Aishwarya Leelas. And then, I'm not including that here, Jiva Goswami is quoting a long list of verses from Shastra, as it's common for him to justify that same statement, just to make clear, I'm not creating my own fancy idea. This is really present from time immemorial. So that's the purpose. He's coming to give joy to the Brajavasis, and he experiences joy by giving joy to the Brajavasis. No, it's not that his joy is selfish. No, I'm coming to extract something from them for me. No, by giving them joy, I'm joyful. That's the nature of love. You have joy by giving joy, not by receiving. And whatever you receive, you are joyful to receive that because you can use that again in service back to the object of your love. So that's the real joy. Even if you receive something, you accept that with joy because you are so much into the mood of service that whatever comes to you, you know how to engage that back in service. So it's never like a burden. Oh, why you are giving this to me? So that's also why we should be able to learn how to receive, no? Because we always emphasize give. But we should learn how to receive in such a way that receiving is part of the further giving. Mm-hmm. If we are in denial of receiving in the name of so-called humility, I only want to give. Actually, you are showing that you don't want to upgrade your condition as a servant. Because first, to receive requires humility, to accept that as a sign of affection, to open your heart, acknowledge your dependence on the ones who are giving to you. But then, what I do with this? So you need to be a good servant to whatever comes to you, re-express that back in upgraded further service. So that's what's actually taking place in the highest above. It seems that everyone is giving and everyone is receiving, but their inner concern is just giving. And because of that's the inner concern, they are receiving so much. But they are giving so much. So basically here Krishna is saying, I'm coming just on earth for that. So we make this point. Bhagavan appears as avatars, different avatars descending in the course of Srishti Lila or this cosmic play. We have spoken about that briefly in Janmastami. But Krishna and does not act for the sake of maintaining the universe. Remember, he's somewhere else beyond that. He can do that even without... He doesn't come to Earth to descend, to protect the Earth. He says, I'm come to protect the Earth. But that's not Raja Krishna saying, doing that. There's a Vishnu portion in him. I mean, he can do all that without coming anywhere. I mean, he's God. He doesn't need to come here to kill Kamsa. I mean, he can just say, goodbye, Kamsa, and goodbye, Kamsa. So merely by his will, I mean, he can destroy universes, what to speak of one single miscreant in one insignificant planet. So why he's coming? I mean, again, he's not coming. He can just blink an eye and create some natural calamity and make a whole continent disappear, if you will. That's a joke for him. He's trying to understand from the Aishwarya perspective, no? And he has this, what's called Satya Sankalpa Shakti, which means a potency that accomplishes whatever he wishes. He wants something and it's already there. But there's no need to make a plan and organize for something to happen. He wants something happening already. No? So then he's coming, although he says he's coming for all the things, that's not Braja Krishna. That's some incidental function through some secondary aspect of him, but he's coming mostly for the delight of his devotees. Remember, which is the definition that the Bhagavatam is given of Bhagavan, what's the Bhagavatam saying? Three words. You have to learn them by heart today. First word already I mentioned. Bhagavan. First word is Bhagavan. I mean, this is not not complex. Second one, you say that. Bhakti. Second, Bhakti, and third one, Bhaktiman. This is Bhagavan, Bhakti, Bhaktiman. Which means Bhagavan is the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. Bhagavan, Bhakta, Bhaktiman. I say Bhakti, sorry, it's Bhakta. Bhagavan, Bhakta, Bhaktiman. So, Bhagavan is he who has Bhakti for his Bhaktas, for his devotees. In other words, Bhagavan is the devotee of his devotees. That's the definition that this Sukadeva Goswami is given in the Bhagavatam, very interesting. And that's, since that's his identity as Bhagavan, that's why, I mean, he's evolving again all these universes and accepting avatars, performing Leela. As we say, the whole Srishti Leela, the whole purpose of this creational movement, pastimes, is this. No? To ultimately give pleasure to his devotees. All that comes, the rest comes after, the topmost priorities. Vedanta say, Lokavattu Leela Kaivalyam. The whole creation is a Leela of Bhagavan. So past, everything is Leela for him, but he has his priority Leela. So all the other secondary Leelas are to exist aligned with that priority Leela, which is the Braja Leela. Mm. That's why his activities are called Leela, divine play. Mm. So it's important to understand that, and for that, of course, we should also go beyond sentimentality, because I know that sometimes, we spoke the other day that with also with Samadhi, sometimes we may have this problem that we hear, okay, Krishna's absorbing his Leela with his devotees on one side. On another side, Paramatma is impartial. So you could feel, so if I'm not a devotee, God is not loving me? Or something like that. God doesn't love everyone? And the point is, what do you understand by love? I mean, if you don't love a person, if you don't love God, God may love you as much as the relationship allows to for that to happen, but if the other person is doing anything and it's even denying the existence of the person, you can expect that God is loving you in Madhurya terms, because for that you need reciprocation, you need the other person. So if I'm not doing my part, do you follow my point? Mm-hmm. God loves me in a generic sense, because what's love? It's not a generic thing. There's love of a father, of a mother, of a lover, of a friend. So for love to be specific, we need to be turned on, if you will. We need to make our part to demand that demand, quote-unquote, from God. But as long as we choose to be passive or even in denial of God's existence, we cannot just say, God is not loving me. I mean, he's doing as much as he can in connection to the nothingness I'm doing. You follow? So if on top of that we're like, well, God is not loving me, it's just more like, I wouldn't say even sentimentality, but some form of hypocrisy, because, I mean, he's there facilitating, of offering chances, and as even as a Paramatma, the God of the world, he's sharing the proper fruits of each action so we can start to find him in divine justice, to have a glimpse of the laws of the universe and gradually get further than that. But we cannot just like pretend, expect that God loves me in the ultimate sense, because that requires two. Love requires two. So that's an important point. Anyhow, so the maintenance of the universe is a concomitant factor, we could say, no? Concomitant, you say, effect? Effect of Krishna dealing with his devotees. Which is interesting, because again, most people, when they think God is, he's the maintainer of the universe, mm-hmm. he's the creator, he's to hear my prayers here, that's the main thing that should be happening in his life, so really pretty much self-centered. But we go just will say, that's a concomitant factor of his dealing with the Vrajavas and his dear devotees. Now, like when you cook food on wood, which is the concomitant factor of cooking on wood, that the room gets heated. Mm-hmm. You are not like thinking, I need that to happen. But oh, it's happening. It's nice. No, there was coal, so I'm alleviated by coal. But the main purpose was to cook something for Dauji Gupal, if you will. No? So, in the course of the Leela, Krishna may kill some devotees while giving pleasure, may kill some, sorry, demons while giving pleasure to his devotees. No? Like that, this can come into an effect. While cooking, the heat will dissolve the coal. So while engaging in the fire of love, cooking with his devotees, some asuras will be killed as concomitant effect. One comes, one sees Upal, one Dantavakra there. In the context of the main thing. Mm-hmm. And as a side effect of that, people from this world, of course, will be benefited. Mm-hmm. Although Bhagavan comes mostly for his devotees, there will be, like again, concomitant effects of that that will spread in so many directions, as the establishing of Dharma and so many other things. And we witnessing those leelas by hearing about that and becoming his devotees and so on. Mm. So it's important, again, just try to remember this point, that Bhagavan, when he comes here, is not coming out of lacking, out of emptiness, out of necessity, in a material sense of the term. Because most of the people are doing, acting in this world out of that. They have some, to achieve something that they are lacking. So it's important here always to first speak about Krishna's Atmaram. And of course there is something beyond that, but God is self-satisfied. So he doesn't need to. He's not lacking anything. So he's not coming to the world because he needs something. He has to. He's coming because of inner delight. He's acting. People in this world can also act out of inner delight. Some people may be so full, so feel fulfilled that start to, I don't know, give charity or dance and celebrate. But why you're doing that? No purpose. Just explosion of celebration, overflowing. So if that can happen here, try to imagine how much that can happen with God. He's really filled. He's really satisfied. So Bhagavan is acting out of bliss. That's what we call Leela. That's why Divya Karma, as we say the other day, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Like an intoxicated person that is dancing out of sheer exuberance. You say, oh, he's drunk. Well, Bhagavan is not an exception to that rule. He has another wine. He's drunk by love and by the affection of the Vrajavasis. He's not dancing to obtain joy. He's dancing out of joy. No? So the same with Krishna. He's not coming to get joy. He already is so joyful that he needs to celebrate. That's the need he has. He has a need to celebrate his self-satisfaction, if you So, as we say, he's a supreme enjoyer. In one sense, he's self-independent. He doesn't need anything. But on the context of that, he enjoys giving enjoyment. That's why he's a supreme enjoyer. Because he enjoys, as we say before, giving enjoyment. Not only just receiving, but serving his Vrajavasis, reciprocating with them, gives him so much joy. And in this connection, we can share a few free words to the name that Brahma uses to address Krishna here, which is Prabhu. Prabhu, which means, oh, Prabhu, master. And the commentators say that Prabhu here means Samartha. So Samartha means like competent, someone who is able to do something. Very competent. Prabhu, O Master, means you know. So the idea is you are able to do all this, what I'm just describing. I mean, you're just creating all this just for this particular sake, and everything works in this particular way. Prabhu, you are capable. You are able to do, Jiva Goswami say, you are able not to do, or you are able to do in any other way. You can do whatever you like, however you like, as we always say, whenever, wherever you like, and everyone likes you. Don't try to imitate that. Don't try to tell your husband, today I will do whatever I like, however I like, I will never like. I don't think he will say, I still like you so much. You're just signing the divorce papers very quickly. No? But Krishna is another case. So let's go to the end of Jiva Goswami's commentary. still we have some minutes, because then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is waiting for us. Yes, yes, yes.
You mentioned three words, Bhagavan, Bhakta, and...
You have to ask them. They are expected to memorize that.
Bhaktivan.
Yeah.
And you described in detail Bhagavan, but...
Sorry?
And you talked about what Bhagavan refers to. Did you mention Bhakta and Bhaktivan?
I say Bhagavan is the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. That's what I say. That's the explanation of those three words. Bhakta, that's what I say. Bhagavan is the devotee of his devotees.
Okay.
It's recorded. You can go through it again, no problem. That's why I'm recording these classes. So Jiva Goswami concludes saying, the pastimes of Krishna with the people of Raj are eternal. Just in case, making that point again. This is indicated in the verse 32, which is the famous Ahobhagyam, Mahobhagyam verse, when he says, Mitram, Sanatanam, Mitram, your friendship is eternal. This is in verse 32, where the friendship of the Lord is unspecified in time. No, it doesn't have a beginning, it doesn't have an end, Sanatanam. And followed by the words, greatest bliss, Paramananda, complete, Purna, and eternal, Sanatanam. All these words appear in verse 32. And can be all connected to friendship, to mitram. To qualify the word mitram can be Paramananda, Purna, Sanatanam. That friendship is the greatest bliss. Brahma is feeling that. That's his ideal. It's complete and it's eternal, which means, again, it's not temporary. Verse 33, again, now he goes through a little bit through the previous verses. Verse 33, again, indicates that the pastimes are eternal. This was also then strengthened by Brahma's prayer for a birth connected with the Brajavasi's foot dust. Then he prayed for that after. If you went to the classes and the verses, you will see that he's praying to be born even as any form. Not because he doesn't want Sakya, but he's possessed by humility. Which implies, by saying I want to be connected with the Brajavasi's foot dust, implies that he rejects Vaikuntha and the rest. By saying I want the dust of Braj, he's indicated I don't want any other. I don't want Vaikuntha, there's no dust. Now everything is always very nicely swept. It's Vaikuntha. No anxiety, no dust. Vrindavan is full of dust. That's one of the main items of Vrindavan. Raj, Braja Raj. Or Renu. You have these three Sanskrit words that characterize Vrindavan. Renu, Dhenu, Benu. So Renu means the dust, it's famous, Braja dust. Dhenu means the cows, and Benu means the flute. So dust, cows, flute. You put them all together, you have Braj. So with this, by longing for the foot of Braj, he's making it clear, I'm not interested in Vaikuntha. And then it is also established by Brahma's justification of the Brajavasi's attainment in a bodily form, of the goal of life, which is Krishna, who is still sought by the Shrutis. So all refers to different verses previous to these ones, which show how the Brajavasis got Krishna in that form that Brahma is now seeing. All the Shrutis are trying to get Krishna, but they are not able yet. But these Brajavasis got them, him. Not able to repay his debts, this goes back 2 verses ago, Krishna then appears in the world as a son over unlimited kalpas of time. Somehow he connects this verse with 2 verses back. Remember that Brahma is asking Krishna, how will you pay back this Vrajavasi? So here starts to unfold the reply. Krishna is appearing in the world over and over again as a son. For example, he gives this particular example of a son because, as we know, also, of course, Krishna is the son of Yashoda in Golok Vrindavan, but he's not born from Yashoda in Golok Vrindavan. But on earth, Yashoda can experience the joy of giving birth to Krishna. That's why Kavi Karnapur mentioned this whole ill on earth was mostly for Yashoda because she's experiencing something that she's not experiencing there. So we could say that's part of the arrangement that Krishna is making, trying to repay back somehow to each of these Brajavasis. Similarly, Jiva Goswami concludes, the previous verse established the uninterruptedness, apratihata, of the Brajavasis bhakti. Oh, the previous person, they have everything and they engage house and family all in your service. So they don't find obstacles to your service. It's not that house is an obstacle, family ties are an interruption to bhakti, but on the contrary. Not only that, he concludes with this, trying to make full circle, Krishna's form as a cowherd, which Brahma is seeing now, said to have a connection with the Brajavasis, is no mithya. With this he goes to first, very first verse of the whole Brahma Stuti. Brahma says no mithya, which means I offer my pranam and that form is worshipable for me, which implies I want to attain that form. So Jiva Goswami concludes, this form is no mithya, which was acknowledged by as Brahma's personal goal. Your form is my goal, as Brahma is saying in the first verse. So very clearly he makes that point from verse 1. And now Jiva Goswami reaching the end is trying to make some recap and full circle. Okay. Ready for Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur? I'm not ready, but what to do? I pray that he may make us ready and qualify and give the adhikar to embrace his teachings. Let's conclude with Sri Vishwanath's Sarartha Darshini. He will give kind of a summary of everything we have seen till now. So that's also good. So we can like recap the whole presentation today. And he will begin with Krishna presenting some idea. Krishna may say, since I'm Purna Brahman, suddenly Krishna is speaking in Aishwaric terms, some think that my mood as the son of these ones here in Braj is not real. Again, this point we see every acharya is trying to address because they know it's easy to misunderstand Brajalila. So make it clear, this is not ordinary. Krishna himself is aware of that. He's saying that here. I'm Purna Brahman, I'm God, but some people may think that my relation with this Brajavasis as something else than God is not real because it doesn't resemble me being God. So what to do with this? So here Brahma says, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, those doubters are truly mistaken. Although you are always beyond the influence of material nature, and that's a fact, you are ever situated within the material world in this type of dynamics of earthly leelas. So you are always beyond the material world, but you are always in the material world, performing your leelas in one planet earth or another. So you assume forms and relationships similar to those found in the material world, but your relationships are not false and temporary like those of material fathers and sons. Your forms and relationships are completely transcendental and eternally existing. Though your pastimes are eternal and transcendental, they appear similar to material activities. Why do you need to imitate material activities? You appear in the material world to spread the mass of bliss of the people who have taken shelter of you. That is, to make their bliss arising by relishing that kind of pastime even better than the bliss of Brahman and even better than the bliss of the pastimes of Vaikuntha. So by you coming on earth, you are giving your devotees, your Brajavasis in this case, a taste of bliss that is not present in Brahman nor in Vaikuntha, which again is a way of saying this Vrindavan is above all this. Although it seems below everything, it's above Brahman and Vaikuntha, which normally is considered spiritual goal, transcendence, Brahman or Vaikuntha. But Vrindavan, again, it seems we are back on earth. Yes, but this beyond. This too. Brahman is not coming to earth. We don't have Vaikuntha Lila on earth. We have Raja Lila, which doesn't make this lower than the other ones, but actually higher. Just as a candle does not shine as brightly in sunlight as it does in darkness, or as a diamond that, here comes a nice point. Try to follow the the analogy and the contrast. Just as a candle does not shine as brightly in sunlight as it does in darkness, or as a diamond is not completely resplendent on a whitish silver vessel as it does on a plate of blue crystal, similarly, Govinda's pastimes do not appear as astonishing in Vaikuntha, which is transcendental, as they do in the material world. That's a contrast. So the idea here is that beautiful things will appear even more beautiful where there is a contrast. So in one sense we could say that's the importance and the ultimate purpose of the material world, to provide a contrasting stage to shed further light about the glories and beauty of Krishna's pastimes. So that's an interesting way of ultimately replying, what's the meaning of all this creational Srishti Lila? To create the proper, dark backdrop of darkness, so when light comes into the world, it shines much more. Yes, those pastimes are going on in Vaikuntha as well, in transcendence, but we have heard many times our church paying special attention to the pastimes on earth. That's especially charming. Because again, this contrast is great. Like when we say the contrast of, okay, you have a child in this world and Krishna being a child while being God. So when you put that contrast, oh, you can appreciate, oh, so charming. So something similar. So he concludes saying, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, although Brajamandal is also transcendental here, a similarity of attributes between Brajamandal situated on earth and the earth beyond, outside of Brajamandal, is like the similarity of attributes between Krishna and a material man. Thus, here on earth, the pastime being bring about special astonishment. That's what we call human-like. They are not human in every sense, but they are enough human as to be called human-like. So it's not that Krishna and material men are the same, but there is something that we can connect that allows us to connect them, but also allows us to see the contrast between one and the other and find the charm of Krishna in human-like terms. So here the point is, the pastimes on earth bring special astonishment, chamatkar. This is just rasa sara chamatkar. Remember this idea, the essence of rasa is to taste astonishment, sacred wonder. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes saying, the gist of the verse is therefore Brahma implying the following. Prabhu, the converging intention, count me among those who are surrendered to you. Because here speaking about, you come to give pleasure to those who are surrendered to you. Please somehow include me in that list. Count me as, the idea is not so much give me pleasure, but this, count me as one of your Brajavasis. Because I know that among those surrendered to you, they are the most surrendered. So you come mostly for them. Count me as one of them. I want to be one of them. Remember, the context of every prayer of Brahma, all the Brahma stuti in the background is Brahma trying to enter there. Brahma trying to see how to properly aspire and get to that point. So he's praying, please come here. Please consider me part of that. I'm here in your Prakat Lila. Brahma is here now with Krishna on earth, again, on location. And again, that's a very special Lila. Prakat Lila has a very specialty above Golok, if you want to put it like that. Guru Maharaj always says that those who are there want to come here. To savor this unique contrasting experience of sacred wonder. Being an ordinary Maya Shakti stage, but performing something which is beyond Brahman and Vaikuntha and creating that unique contrast in the world. That happened in the world. That's a very unique story for us who are traveling Brahmanda Brahmitikona from limited lifetimes in the world, not in Vaikuntha or Brahman, and we are intercepted here in the world with such a divine performance, if you want to put it like that, divine expression here. And from here we can, of course, enter there. So anyhow, so after concluding, with this verse he's concluding, as I mentioned, this series of prayers about the Brajavasis. And in the next verse, tomorrow, verse 38, Brahma will begin his concluding statements. Three more verses, 38, 39, and 40. And he will very humbly try to, reaffirm how little he knows about Krishna. Because again, after all that he, these things he saw in the last minutes, in his last minutes, like, what can I say? He says, he tried to say something, but so he will speak how little he knows about Krishna, how little he knows about his Aishwarya, and how little he knows about that Madhurya that is backed by his Aishwarya. So that will be the wrapping up of the Brahma Stuti. We'll continue that tomorrow. So, are there any questions before we finish? To the ones present here, to those connected online. No? Okay. Ruminating. Lots to ruminate. We have to become cow-like. You want to enter Golok, the plant of cow? You have to become like a cow and learn to ruminate. And to chew. Chew. Puna punas charvita charvananam, like Prahlad say. He was referring to material life there, no? Like chewing that has been chewed, but we are trying to apply that. We are chewing what we have received by parampara, hearing from our guardians, already chewed by them and by their purvacharas, and continue the chewing. There's no end to how much juice can be extracted from that chewing. There's eternal juice. So, pivata bhagavatam rasamalayam. For eternity and even beyond liberation, continue chewing. The Bhagavatam is saying continue drinking this nectar, but continue chewing. Yes.
To clarify a term, you said whenever Krishna wants something, it happens immediately, and that's
satya. Satya, sankalpa. Yeah, shakti, yeah, sometimes. Okay. Sankalpa means like desire, and satya means truth. So whatever he desires becomes truth. Basically, that's the idea. And he has a potency which, I mean, you can call that an aspect of his yoga maya, is another way of putting that. Yeah. Okay. Srila Gurudev ki jaya, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jaya, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jaya, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jaya, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jaya, Gaur Praman Hari.